This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. I appreciate you being here today. Thanks for joining us. It's Thursday. Tomorrow's Cape May Day. We'll be there live 3 to 7 p.m. at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. I'm excited. You're excited. It's our last show of the year. It is our last show of the year, baby. So come out and see us, all right? We're going to have a lot of fun and some surprises, and you just never know what a live show is going to bring. I have a feeling Santa Claus is going to be there, though. That I know. So join us at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, and we would love for you to do that tomorrow. The president spoke last night. He's given some year-end bonuses to the military, 1776. I think that'll go over very well. Why not? How could it not? Obviously. And AOC says she would stomp J.D. Vance if the two of them were in a head-to-head primary. She would stomp J.D. Vance. Now, let's begin with that for a moment, shall we? Because there's a lot of talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Sandy from Yorktown Heights. There's a lot of talk about her becoming the nominee for the Democrat Party in 2028. Not out of the realm of possibility, that's for sure. Not out of the realm of possibility. When you consider the fact that she's very popular, she's great on social media, she's crazy, and the Democrat Party loves them some crazy. She's Bernie Sanders, but a younger, more attractive version of Bernie Sanders. And she's become the star of the Democrat Party. And she has not run nationally. So she has not yet been exposed like Tim Walz and Kamala Harris and so many other people. And she's not been an executive, so she doesn't have a record. She got a voting record, but she'll stand by that voting record. But unlike Gavin Newsom, it's not like you can tear apart her record as governor. She doesn't have one. That's going to be Gavin Newsom's biggest hurdle, is that his record as governor has been disastrous. She's a diehard progressive. She's a true believer, which helps in a primary. It absolutely does. Now, what she does not have going for her in a primary anyway, though, of course, is the Democrat establishment, because the Democrat establishment, as you know, with their process, it's not an open process. The Republican Party is actually a truly open process. You know, anybody can run, and the party can try to stop you like they tried to stop Trump in 2016. But if the people want you, the people want you, and that's how it goes. Democrats are a little different. They use superdelegates, who are people that have lots and lots of money. They're former elected officials, former presidents. They're the establishment. And does the establishment want Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? No, absolutely not. They can't control her. She's Bernie Sanders. They can't control him. They didn't want him. So what she does not have going for her as she heads towards a primary in 2028 is that. It's that the establishment would much rather have somebody like a Gavin Newsom, somebody who they feel like they can control, somebody who they feel like they can maneuver, and that would not be AOC in the least. But in terms of the grassroots of the party, I mean, she's solid with them. You know, they love her. General election matchup between her and J.D. Vance, I mean, that's a million years from now. 1,000 different things can change. It would really be up to what the mood of the electorate is. I don't think the country is ready for her brand of socialism. I don't. Will the country be ready for that brand of socialism in 3 years? I mean, I doubt it. But then again, you know, there's the Democrats are purposely right now torpedoing any reform on Obamacare so that premiums go up. I mean, that's what they're trying to do here. Let's understand that. That's what they're trying to do. They want premiums to go up. They want people to hurt so that they can blame Republicans. They're not looking to try to compromise and get something done here. It's just like with the government shutdown, too. They want to cause pain. They want to cause damage. They think that by doing these things, they'll be able to win. They'll be able to have people angry at Republicans, and then they can turn around and they can say, hey, look, look what we accomplished here. We were able to get people to hurt. And I know that that sounds crazy, but it's really not when you think about it. When Republicans are in control, and Republicans don't just want to continue, and nor should they, with Obamacare the way it is now, then Democrats just do nothing. And then the Obamacare subsidies go away, premiums go up, people get angry at who? The party in power. I mean, that's what their strategy is here. You don't have to be a genius to see it. Republicans breaking from the speaker on this issue. Well, they can break on the speaker with the issue, but it doesn't matter because Democrats are not going to go along with any reforms whatsoever on Obamacare. They don't want to. Their goal here is to make life more unaffordable for everybody so that they can then try to reclaim power. They can blame it on the majority, say it's all them, it's their fault, it's not us, we try, they won't do anything, they won't work with us, blah, 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 and that's how it is, and blah, 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 blah. Yes, no, Santa Claus, that's you, Santa Claus. Santa Claus was just texting me and asking if he's the Santa Claus I'm referring to. Yes, Santa, you are our only Santa Claus for the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, the real Santa Claus. I have a direct line to him. And he said, I'm listening to your show, and I just heard you say about Santa Claus. You haven't. No, you are Santa. And I know him. And there's only one. And that's you. So we'll see you there on tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow. I mean, I can't believe it's here. It's so funny. You know, you plan these events a year out, and you pick these dates. And then the next thing you know, the dates are here. And it just goes by so fast. And then next week, we're Christmas Eve. We're Christmas. And then it's New Year, and then 2026 is upon us. And before you know it, we're all knee-deep in talking about the midterm elections and knee-deep in talking about all this stuff. So there's that. But luckily, we may be able to use marijuana. We're grabbing some audio for you from what the president said in his announcement in the Oval Office. And he took some questions, too. He had a lot to say today. And, you know, I mean, as Dr. Oz put it, the ability to do research into the positive effects of cannabis on things like, for example, PTSD. Not there right now. Can't really do it. Can't do it. Anecdotally, we've heard things that pot can help with that. There are places that sell it. There are dispensaries. Obviously, I've told you, Bell Pharmacy in Camden, our buddy Tony Minetti, who's a friend of the show. You know, that's what they do. I mean, they also are full service pharmacy, but they're a dispensary. You probably know people that are in this business, too. And they sell gummies and they sell lots of different things and lozenges. And, you know, there are THC drinks now. That's become a big thing. People go to the liquor store and instead of buying liquor, they buy THC infused seltzers. There are some that are fruity and there are some that are unflavored. They're calorie free. There are some that have carbonation and some that don't. Now, I don't know anything about those things. I've never tried one myself. But what I know is that there are people who swear by the pain-relieving effects of cannabis, and they swear by the fact that this can also help people who are dealing with things like PTSD. In fact, there was a guy who spoke today at the White House. I watched the signing on this, and he said that he's speaking on behalf of veterans who are dealing with this. And they've had different trials on not just cannabis, but also psychedelic drugs, you know, mushrooms, for example, LSD, a lot of these other things, to see if they can help with PTSD. Because a lot of the conventional big pharma treatments, antidepressants, anti-anxiety pills, and they just haven't worked. They haven't done it. So the ability has been limited right now, at least as far as marijuana goes. And then you get into the other issue, too, which is technically speaking, while it's not legal on the federal level, if somebody were to get caught with it and the feds wanted to go after them, it would be the equivalent of having heroin, which we all know is a lot worse. I mean, everybody can, whether you like pot or you don't like pot, and I don't use it, but whether you like it or not, you can at least agree it's different from heroin. Obviously, but keeping in that same schedule as heroin means that it becomes very difficult for people if the feds wanted to crack down. Now, they haven't. You know, they haven't gone after the states. They haven't been raiding these dispensaries. They could, though. I mean, they could tomorrow. They could start raiding dispensaries. The DEA could go in, start raiding dispensaries just because the state legalizes it. If it's still illegal on the federal level, although I philosophically completely disagree with that, just so you understand, I don't believe the federal government has any authority over this. In my opinion, if a state wants to legalize marijuana, I don't think the Fed should be able to go in there and do anything about it. But that's not how it works. I don't get to make the rules, and that's what the rules are right now. So the way it works right now is theoretically the DEA could start raiding dispensaries, states, people that have it. I mean, if you have it at your house and you have a certain amount, they could bust you and they could say you have the intent to distribute. They could make your life a living hell. This administration's not doing that. They're not going to do that. They've said as much. President Trump said as much in the campaign. He wasn't going to do that. So it's not something that people have to actually really worry about. But theoretically speaking, that could. Now that it's moved over from Schedule 1 and it's away from that, it opens up the avenues for research. And then you also end this potential battle that you could have between the feds and the states. But it doesn't legalize it. And some states have legalized it. And there's still that issue because states have legalized marijuana, even though it's illegal on the federal level, technically, and still is. There is that remaining conflict there. But that only requires if the feds were to actually enforce that, and they're not doing so. And the other thing that is interesting to think about, too, when you're kind of processing all this, when it comes to this stuff, and, you know, people have said that the strains of cannabis today are a lot different than they were a long time ago in the 60s and the 70s when everybody was token up and, you know, make love, not war. And I've read a lot about this recently, you know, links between cannabis and depression and psychosis. And as part of this, they can look into all that. You know, they can actually study that and see if there are effects on that. And they can maybe give people better guidance on that, because right now everything is purely anecdotal. You know, if somebody swears by the pain relieving effects or the insomnia relieving effects of it based on their use, that's an anecdotal use. It's not scientific, and that's that. Or they can cite studies from Europe, or they can cite, you know, journals that, but it hasn't gone through the rigorous testing. It's the same exact thing with whether or not the negative effects are real and it causes psychosis and depression and aggression and everything else. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, as part of the Travis Manning Foundation dinner, I had dinner with a psychiatrist, a great guy who testifies in criminal trials, particularly around murder. And, you know, it's funny because as I was talking to him, And he was describing, he said he goes to court more nowadays to testify on the fact that the guy was high on pot than the guy was high on PCP, angel dust, heroin, any of that stuff. And that was surprising to me as we were discussing that over dinner. Now, I remember texting a friend of mine about that night because she had a friend who was just using a lot of pot, you know, smoking it every day, and was like a different person and had just become very withdrawn and very sullen. And I said, hey, you may find this interesting. But again, that's all anecdotal. You know, for every five people you find who will argue, like Alex Berenson wrote a whole book about this, and he says legalizing marijuana is the worst thing ever. It's bad and it should never be done. You'll find five other people who will say it's the greatest thing ever. It comes from nature. It's better than alcohol. It's better than any pharmaceutical you can get out there. But we don't know. You know, that's the problem. We don't know. Now, there's another downside to this, as my buddy Tony Minniti said yesterday, which is that this now does enable Big Pharma to get their hooks into it, whereas before they couldn't. It was a Schedule I substance, so they couldn't touch it. Now they can. So what does that mean then for the future? Does that mean that Big Pharma will like they've done with so many other things, ignore all of the potential problems with it and just turn around and say, hey, it's great. And here's our prescription for it. Here's our actual prescription. So instead of a doctor, you know, what I always loved about this was when pot first became used for medicinal purposes, you'd have doctors who would come along and write these scripts for back pain or whatever it was. And then people would go to these medical dispensaries and they wait online. They'd have their card. They'd show their card. They'd get their stuff. Well, I mean, once, you know, Pfizer starts making their cannabis treatment or whatever, it'll be prescribed by a doctor. I'm not saying those doctors weren't real doctors, but and then your insurance will cover it. And then so what I worry about then is if there are potential downsides to it, those will all be covered up. And then you'll find out 25 years later, like you did with Propecia. I mean, I still can't believe that Propecia, the hair loss drug. And then they find decades later that they covered up all this information, how Propecia was causing depression and anxiety in people. A freaking hair loss drug. But they buried it. They didn't want people to know that because they wanted to keep, you know, having people use it. And so you had people with wonderful coifs of hair who were also highly depressed and anxious. And, you know, that's the reality of the situation, which is that Big Pharma does that a lot. So now they'll be able to get their hooks into it. And I'm sure a lot of that's motivated this, too. A lot of lobbying. The minute that it became widely available, and the minute that states either legalized it or allowed it for medicinal purposes, they realized now that there was a whole marketplace that they were not getting, they were not able to access. And that was not going to go over well. That was not going to last. I predicted that years ago. I mean, I think everybody did. It's not like I'm some soothsayer. It's just that if you've got a market that exists, and that market says, hey, you can walk into a dispensary and you can get a treatment for back pain, depression, anxiety, insomnia, whatever it is. But you've got all of these prescription pills for those very things, or over-the-counter products that are made and sold in pharmacies for those very things, but made by Big Pharma. Well, Big Pharma is not going to sit around for long and just let that competition stand. No, not if they can get, if they can avoid it. So I think at first what they tried to do was they spent a lot of time and a lot of lobbying money trying to get states to not legalize it or allow it for medicinal purposes. Then we went through this period where it became a social justice thing. You remember that? Where I remember Count Constantius Spartacus Booker and the Tears of Rage band with fake tears, talking about the people who've been locked up for marijuana crimes and how they should all be released. And that was a terrible thing. And this was about justice. And restorative justice for all these people who had been, so they did that. They moved to do that and started expunging records for anybody who had gone to jail or gone to prison for having pot. And then that became kind of a civil rights issue. It really happened in like 21, 22, like that time. And they did that in New Jersey. They did that in a number of other places as well. And the Biden administration said that they were going to move marijuana from the Schedule 1, and they pointed this out today, and they never did. And Secretary Kennedy talked about that. He said, you know, this process started under the first Trump administration. The Biden administration said they were going to do something about it. They never did anything about it. And here today, we're finally doing something about it after many, many years of promising people that we would do something about it. And now we're actually doing something about it. So it was for a lot of people, they're very, very happy about it. But I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of people who come out and say, this is bad and you should not do it. And you should definitely not take it, use it, whatever. And that this is only going to make it more accessible to people. And it's not a good thing. So it'll be a big debate, but I'm glad it's removed from the Schedule 1, like heroin. That was stupid. And that was dumb. I never really understood that in the first place. And quite frankly, I think a lot of people were of the same mindset of saying, well, how can you really say that this is as bad as heroin? So the president also moving to end gender related care for minors, translation, mutilation of kids and puberty blockers, which are not approved to block puberty. They're moving away from that as well. And they're threatening hospitals that offer it. Good. I say good. Go after those hospitals. Go after those medical centers. If they are using those barbaric procedures on minors, then go after them. Make sure they get no funding. Lock up the doctors who are doing it. Absolutely 100%. gender-related care. It's not gender-related care. What it is kids with mental health problems who think that they are in the wrong sex body, and then you have doctors out there who prey on these kids, and they will lob off their boobies and chop off their wieners and do all of these other things to these kids who are not old enough to make decisions. We don't actually let them even buy alcohol or cigarettes or get a gun in many places, but we let them do this. And of course, the president has called this one of the greatest travesties in our nation's history, a stain in our nation's history. I completely agree with that, 100%. It has been a stain in our nation's history. I think that we will look back on this time of gender mutilation, mutilating kids' bodies and giving them these drugs. We will look back on this with absolute shame. And we will think about all the doctors out there, surgeons and others who made $500 billion in this industry, $500 billion industry in this so-called gender affirming care. And they went as far as babies in the womb to say that a baby in the womb knows that it's in the wrong body. Like, what? No, there was that quack doctor who said that once. They were as kids as young as 3 and 4 years old. They were starting them in the process of getting them to wear clothing of the different sex and to start living their true self at 4 years. At 4 years old, I thought I was Batman. And I truly believed I was. I mean, I still do. But the point is that for whatever reason, kids with all their fantasies, this fantasy, we encouraged children to pursue. And we encouraged them to pursue it even at the expense of a knife, at the expense of drugs, at the expense of this lie that a boy can be a girl and a girl can be a boy. No, you can chop off body parts. It doesn't make a boy a girl. You know, you could chop a schwanz off. That schwanz hits the floor. That boy does not become a girl. That boy just doesn't have a schwanz anymore. That's just how it works. You know, chop boobies don't make one a boy. I mean, there are plenty of men out there with man boobs, but it doesn't make them girls. They're still men. They just have man boobs. They might have high estrogen. I don't know, but they're still men. But we live this. We encourage this great lie, this great scandal that was for years and years and years. We did this, and it was just awful. That is the Big Story of the Hour, brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. My buddy, I'm seeing him, I think, New Year's Eve. I got an appointment for my cleaning. He's my dentist. He's my friend, and he's the guy that's going to give you the great smile you deserve. So reach out to his office and schedule your appointment today. Veneria gum disease. VeneriaDental.com. And while you're there, talk to him about gum disease. Because it turns out there's a link now between gum disease and heart disease and even mental health. It's true. So if you've not seen a dentist, you better do so. I'll talk to you a little bit more about that story later in the show today. But we're going to talk to the Attorney General of Pennsylvania. The president now has said he does not want anybody, any of these states out there, to be able to have their own regulations on AI. He wants a national policy. We'll find out what the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Dave Sunday, thinks about that and what his office is doing in reaction to that. Got a big show for you today. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, it's Thursday. Tomorrow we're live in Cape May. Santa Claus making a special appearance. We're excited for that. And right now on the show, it's great to welcome back to the show Dave Sunday. He is the Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Mr. Attorney General, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful, thank you. And it is great to be here.
It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
So a couple things I want to chat with you about. First of all, the AI stuff I want to get into, but I know you've probably been following this, the updates on the shooting at Brown University and the search for a suspect there. Mm-hmm. I mean, this seems like a real botched operation, a Keystone Cop kind of thing. Any thoughts on that as we kind of get started here?
Well, my thoughts are, obviously, to begin with, you know, having been a prosecutor for a long time with violent crime, my heart clearly goes out immediately to anyone that was involved with this. It's so traumatic and terrible, and I know you know that. You've talked about this on your show many times. To begin with, I mean, none of us really know what's going on with the investigation. And oftentimes I will say that, you know, law enforcement might know or have a lead that they just, for whatever reason, may not be able to make public at this point. I mean, I have no knowledge at all of the investigation itself, other than what I've seen on TV and have followed just like everybody else. You know, I will say that the faster you can make that arrest, the better. And the longer it takes, that can create more problems. So I will also say that obviously in a situation like this, I mean, your concern is for public safety, meaning that the individual could become desperate when it comes time to take someone into custody who has been, you know, on the run for a long period of time. That can make it even more dangerous by the minute. So I just hope that they get it squared away and get that person arrested and in custody so they can't cause any more harm.
Thanks for your thoughts on that. As a prosecutor, I appreciate that because a lot of people have questions, and you know, it's good to get access to your thoughts on that. I think we're all just confused. I know they're going to do another update today, but all right. So moving on to AI, the president this week signed an executive order. Maybe it was last week, and he said he wants one policy for the United States of America. And he said essentially now, you know, in order for us to be able to compete on the world stage, we can't have these different state laws. We can't have 50 different models for how we're going to deal with AI. You have said that you are going to challenge that on behalf of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
Okay, a couple things that are important here. So the first part is the creation of our... So what happened was there's a National Association of Attorneys General, right? That's every AG in the country. And we all come together in a bipartisan manner to address things that we can address. And this is an issue where 42 of the states have come together, and this was done long before the executive order ever came out, where we came together and decided that we were going to essentially put the heat on the companies that are involved with this to make sure that they're doing everything they can to protect children that are using these AI chatbots. And so that's sort of part one to this. The executive order is completely separate and addresses a lot of different things. Within that executive order, there is a provision that creates a task force that will challenge AI state laws that the federal government deems to be overly burdensome. And so it's through that category where if someone would sue the state government, the attorney general by statute defends statutes that are passed by legislators and signed into law by the governor. And so the question posed of me very simply was, if that happens, would you defend the state statute? And of course I would. It's my job, and I'm legislatively mandated to do so.
What I don't really understand is where the president has the authority to do this outside of Congress. And I imagine there's going to be a lawsuit to stop this, I would think, because I would imagine maybe your association or maybe other states would sue to stop this and say, you know, hey, we have a right to regulate this on our terms. Do you see that happening?
Well, this executive order is a little, it's unclear as to how this is going to actually be implemented. Part of it directs the Department of Commerce to review laws and identify those that it views as being overly burdensome.
Okay.
And then I guess the task force will then potentially, you know, file a lawsuit under those circumstances. And I don't want to go down a deep rabbit hole, but essentially arguing that they might be preempted as a result of a violation of the Commerce Clause or something of that nature. And so that's sort of part one to this. What you said is the argument. Essentially, you know, what is that balance where you have the federal government that regulates a lot of things, and the federal government does regulate a lot of things that the states can't, for example, like copyright law, things of that nature. And at the same time, where are we left as a state to protect, you know, children and people in the state that we determine? So essentially, that's really going to be the argument. And it's very unclear. I will tell you, Rich, that it is very unclear. And this is one that you're going to kind of have to wait and see how it evolves to figure out what it will really do. So, for example, in the executive order itself, there's a carve out for situations where a state regulates or creates law protecting children, for example. And so I guess to be honest, and I know this is no surprise to your listeners and viewers, but the law is not always clear. And this is one where we're going to have to kind of do a wait and see approach to see how this actually works.
So Attorney General Dave Sunday is with us right now. So the executive order creates a task force. The task force will then look into individual state laws. Are there any particular state laws that you've heard so far that could be problematic as far as the interests of the United States of America in advancing AI?
I have not heard of any laws in Pennsylvania where that's the case. I've heard... You know, I've heard commentary about laws in California that are viewed to be overly burdensome. I've heard commentary about laws in New York that may appear to be overly burdensome. I have not heard of any laws in Pennsylvania that fit that mold. And I will tell you, one of the questions asked of me was, so recently the legislature passed the law and the governor signed it into law, and that was creating additional penalties for people that are utilizing AI to create child sexual abuse material. And that's really, really important. And that's you know, vital to public safety. And the question posed of me was, you know, what's my recommendation to district attorneys? Do they continue to follow that law? And the answer is absolutely 100%, of course. And so it's one of those vague, you know, it's sort of vague, and it's one of those things we're going to kind of have to watch unfold. Now, at the same time, there's another part of the executive order that we're also going to have to keep an eye on, and that involves utilizing sort of the purse string to preempt certain laws and potentially withholding, and I'm trying to think, it was potentially broadband funds to sort of compel a state to not regulate in the AI space.
To not regulate in the AI space, try to keep them away from doing regulations.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Okay. What would be the downside? Because everything you're saying in terms of a state regulating, you know, to keep kids safe and all these other things, from the argument of somebody who's in the business of developing artificial intelligence or for the interests of the country as we're trying to compete on the global stage here, what would potentially be problematic in that? What I can't wrap my head around is what kind of a law would be passed that would really hurt the United States efforts? And because it's, look, the president's goal is correct here on this. We want to be the world leader on this. We want our AI. I always say this. I want our AI to be able to beat up China's AI, you know, and I want us to be able to win. So, I mean, what could a state really pass that would hinder the United States in that mission?
So you're 100% right. And the point that I've made throughout really for months and months as we've been dealing with, well, actually probably close to a year on dealing with this issue, is that being the technological leader is not mutually exclusive with protecting children and vulnerable populations like seniors and people with mental health that have severe mental health issues. You can do both. We want innovation, and innovation is the key for so many wonderful things that make America great. I mean, this has happened, I mean, for hundreds of years. And so we want that to happen. You know, I believe that the concern is that you may have states all across the country that regulate that regulate the internal mechanism of the AI itself, meaning that, you know, when you look at AI regulation, you have regulation of the actual code and everything that occurs, you know, within the AI process versus regulation of how humans use AI. And this is what I really think we're going to hear more about as this progresses. So, for example, the CSAM, Child Sexual Abuse Material legislation in Pennsylvania, regulates how a human can use that AI technology to do bad things. What my understanding is, the federal government does not want our different states with different, whatever their ideology might be, it does, for our purposes of our conversation, doesn't even matter. It's just whatever it is, that they cannot create a situation where the government is changing truthful AI outputs, if that makes sense. That's mm-hmm. what the argument is. And that will create a patchwork of legislation that will inhibit these companies' ability to innovate and to essentially, you know, win that fight. And so that's how the argument is crystallizing as you now listen to people kind of taking positions on it. My position, very simply, is this. As the Attorney General, my job is to protect Pennsylvanians. And we have to protect kids from social media, from AI, chatbots, and from all the different ways that technology, as amazing as it is being used by super bad people to try to get to kids and exploit them. And so as Attorney General, that's the space that I'm going to live in and do everything in my power to protect.
And, you know, Dave, as we're having this conversation, and you mentioned California. I heard Bernie yep. Sanders yesterday talking about how he wants to put a moratorium on AI data centers because he's worried about jobs. I could see a blue state, for example, trying to regulate AI so that it doesn't take people's jobs away, which is the kind of government overreach that would just be disastrous because, you know, in order to right. do that, you'd have to basically stop AI because, I mean, it's inevitable that people, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, like right. any other technology, when the car came around, people lost their horse and buggy jobs. I mean, it's, you know, right. it's just the way it goes. But I could right. see that happening. And I could see that being a big concern of the White House, a state like yep. Gavin Newsom, for example, coming in and saying, you know, we're going to limit the amount, the ability of companies to use AI in place right. of certain workers or things like that. And while that may be a noble goal to try to save people's jobs, it's ridiculous. And it's the kind of thing that will have major consequences for potentially for development.
Right. And to that point, you know, when you look at AI, if it's not created and innovated here in America, it's going to happen in other places.
Yes.
And the companies will move through the path of least resistance to get to a place where they can make this happen. And it is happening all over the world. And so, so to your point, number one, we have to be in a position to win that fight. We as Americans have to be at the tip of the spear on artificial intelligence. But I refuse to believe that we can't get there without putting all the protections in place that need to be done to make sure that children are safe when they are going online. I can't tell you how unbelievably important this is. And the things that we see done or attempted to be done through children's access to technology is something that should make a lot of people very scared.
Attorney General Dave Sunday, while we have you, it's been a while since we caught up. Give me yeah. a kind of an overview of some of the other stuff you've been working on. I mean, it's about what you've been in office, I guess, about a year now. Just about. Yep. So and congratulations. I mean, you know, it was a big win. We were very happy for you. Very happy that you
Thank
won.
You.
Supported your campaign a lot. So how's
Thank
it been?
You.
How's it going? And what are some of the key things you're working on?
I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, every day is a blessing. I feel so grateful to have this opportunity. And as I said, through the course of my campaign, if community If communities aren't safe, nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. And so we've obviously leaned heavily into doing everything we can to support, for example, the Gun Violence Task Force in Philadelphia. We announced a few months ago that since I've been elected Attorney General, well, since I took office, we've removed over 50 million doses of fentanyl. Great. 50 million doses of fentanyl throughout Pennsylvania.
Amazing.
And so we are collaborating with the DAs all throughout the state, from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, and doing everything we can to fight that battle and to go after these large organizations. We've taken large criminal enterprises off the street that have operated in Philadelphia and all throughout Southeast Pennsylvania, that have connected to Western Pennsylvania, that have connected to Northeast Pennsylvania. And so we've done a lot in that area. Protecting seniors is one of my priorities. So we created an elder exploitation section within the Attorney General's office, where we are coming together and working with our partners all throughout Pennsylvania, not just to do what we can to prevent this stuff from happening to seniors, but to investigate and prosecute people that are exploiting senior citizens. So that's unbelievably important. We have a huge mental health crisis in Pennsylvania. I've talked about this until I'm blue in the face, and I will keep doing it. And so we have expanded initiatives in the AG's office, where we work with the police to help get people into treatment that are in the throes of a mental health crisis. I mean, these aren't people that are committing violent crimes. These are people that you see in the street that have severe mental health issues. And that is really important. It makes our community safer. I mean, think about all the horrific violent crimes that occur. If you walk back through a lot of these people's lives, you'll find at some point they had a mental health crisis and it went unaddressed. And so not only is it just the right thing to do, but it's something that's critical for community safety. I'm now co-chair of the National Consumer Protection Committee for the National Association of Attorneys General. That's a big deal, and we have to do everything we can to protect consumers in Pennsylvania. That's something that we're leaning into heavily. And I could honestly go on all day, but I will tell you that, I've done everything I can, just like when I was a DA, to find partners to work together to make sure that people are safe. Because you can take politics and throw it out the door. At the end of the day, the most important thing that matters is that our families and children are safe. And that's what we are laser focused on every day.
Great. Well, listen, it's great catching up with you. Last thing I want to say is, I know you're a big supporter of the cops. Yes. You had their endorsement in the campaign.
Of course.
As Attorney General, standing up for law enforcement has also been a key priority, right?
100%. I chair the police recruitment and retention task force. It's a statewide task force where we're working to identify ways that we can help get more police officers and then keep them there. That is near and dear to my heart. Good. As a career prosecutor, I've worked side by side with the police throughout the course of my career. And if we do not support the police and help get them the tools they need to do their job, we will be in a really bad place. I, for one, am grateful that we live in a country where when we dial 911, someone comes to our house to protect us. That's not the way it is everywhere, and it's something we should be grateful of, and I am certainly grateful for.
Well, listen, it's great catching up with you. Please come back and see us again. Attorney General
Thank
Dave
you.
Sunday, keep up the good work. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more conversations on this AI stuff as 2026 unfolds. But have a great holiday. Merry Christmas to you and your family. And look forward to seeing you next year.
And Merry Christmas to you as well. And I look forward to seeing you again in 2026.
Yes. Thanks, Dave.
Take care.
Appreciate it. Attorney General Dave Sunday.
On Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right. As we continue along the show here today, obviously we'll be in Cape May tomorrow, and we're excited for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. Great show. You can imagine what chaos will ensue, but it's always a great time. So I want to make sure you join us for that tomorrow afternoon. Okay. We got a lot to get to on the show today. Tell you about Bob's Little Sports Shop. My great friends over at Bob's. I'm going to be seeing them in the next couple weeks because I'm ready to buy another gun. And there's no place that I would go besides Bob's to buy a firearm. And what I'm going to do is I want to try a couple out this time around. I want to try a couple out, see which one I like best. And that's something you could do at Bob's. You can go there, find the firearm that works for you, and they'll help you with the paperwork, the licensing, all of it, and then the training, which is so incredibly important as well, learning how to properly use that firearm. Now, you might have people on your list, last-minute shopper, I get it. December 24th, Christmas Eve, they're open. You can stop in and get Bob's gift cards. And the great thing is that for every $100 you spend in Bob's Bucks, you're going to get $10 to use in Bob's, or every $100 for gift card, you get $10 in Bob's Bucks to use for 2026, which is great because then you can use it for yourself. And they have the best selection of firearms anywhere, the best people who know those firearms, which is key, and can help you find the right firearm for you. All that matters. And then, of course, the classes, the safety, learning how to properly use it, how to clean your gun. I mean, people don't know how to clean a gun properly. You got to learn that too. And Bob's will help you every step of the way. So go see them. They're right on Delsey Drive in Glassboro, New Jersey. 60 years family owned in business. Great people dedicated to the Second Amendment and your protection and your safety. So Bob's Little Sports Shop, my go-to shop, BobsLittleSportsShop.com. This ad sponsored by Bob's Little Sports Shop.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Apparently, the police do have a suspect in the Brown University shooting. They have a warrant and they have his ID. They have not officially announced it yet. They're waiting for an update on that. Depending on the schedule, we may dip in live. It's a busy day, though. The president signing his executive order reclassifying marijuana from Schedule 1, and we got to talk about that as well. Coming up, we always check in with our friends over at FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. They do their annual report on the state of free speech in America, and particularly colleges that punish students for free speech violations, so to speak, you know, for speech they don't like. And we'll talk about that as well. And like I mentioned, the president signing, he's going after hospitals that mutilate our kids and this transgender mutilation surgeries and the drugs and all of it. So that's a very, very positive thing. And AOC says she would whoop J.D. Vance in 2028. What do you think about that? You'll have to let me know as we continue along the show here. So we got a big 4 o'clock hour straight ahead. A lot to get to. It's a busy day. Cape May Day tomorrow. We'll be there live at the Grand Hotel, 3 to 7 p.m. It's going to be a lot of fun, so make sure you come out and join us tomorrow in Cape May, Grand Hotel. Not Congress Hall, Grand Hotel Cape May. That's our happy place, fifth floor ballroom. You don't need a ticket. You don't need a reservation. Just come to the show. You can stay for a little bit. You can stay for all of it. That's up to you. We'll see you there tomorrow. Either way, coming up, we got a great guest, FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.